Hello everyone, this is Bosco DeMello from Conscious Development. The focus of our work is to make leadership at all levels of the organization more resilient and effective so that they and their ecosystem can flourish in an uncertain and complex world. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Barry Johnson. As the founder of the principle of polarities and polarity management, some of you might already know who Barry is, but for many of you who perhaps don't, in 1975, Barry created the first polarity map and the set of polarity principles. And since then, he has been learning with clients how to leverage polarities, which are also known as paradoxes, dilemmas, tensions, wicked problems, etc. Polarity thinking has been applied in hundreds of organizations, large and small, in the US and globally. Barry is devoted to his family. He is an avid outdoorsman and intrepid traveler, and brings head and heart together in his presentations, teaching, and consulting. Barry and his wife, Dana, live in Michigan and California. I'm honored to say Barry is also my teacher. His book in 1992, Polarity Management, Identifying and Managing Unsolvable Problems, is in wide use in businesses and community organizations. His third book, which is titled And, How to Leverage Polarity, Paradox, or Dilemma, can be purchased now as it is being written. In today's podcast, Barry shares with us insights about how polarities can be leveraged to make coaching transformative. As coaches, we want to be more insightful so that we can serve our clients in the best possible manner. We want to help them leverage their strengths so they become more effective personally and professionally. Barry tells us how coaches can make coaching conversations more meaningful with an understanding of polarities. He opens a window to how coaches can assist clients, be they teams, individuals, or organizations, in managing dilemmas and seeing constructive and destructive patterns so that they can make wiser choices and decisions. Over to you, Barry.
Thanks very much, Bosco. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm also very appreciative of this opportunity to share polarity thinking and how it relates to coaching. Let's get right into this process. Okay, so first I want to just identify our mission. And our mission is to enhance our quality of life on the planet by supplementing or thinking with and thinking. And we do that by teaching everyone to leverage polarities. So this is our hope that we think that for everybody, not just leaders or people in significant power positions, but for everybody on the planet, our hope is that they would be able to see and leverage polarities to enhance the quality of their life and our lives together. We're suggesting that coaches, leaders, teams, and organizations that leverage polarities well outperform those that don't. There's a lot of research to support this, and so I think it's a reasonable claim. I want to just give some examples of what we mean by polarities, and one of them is being clear and being flexible. And what we're suggesting is this polarity is, if it's leveraged well, makes one an effective coach, or it could make one an effective leader. We believe that a lot of leadership competencies and coaching competencies are better understood in pairs. This is one of them. It's helpful for a coach to be both clear and flexible. If a coach is clear without being flexible, they end up being seen as rigid. If they're flexible without being clear, they end up being seen as ambiguous. So the notion is we need to maximize the clarity and maximize their flexibility and try to minimize any rigidity or ambiguity, and that will lead to being an effective coach. And so this is the same assumption with all of the polarities we're going to talk about. This is an energy system that incorporates both poles of the polarity. And what we try to do is maximize the upside, in this case, the benefits of clarity, and minimize the downside. And at the same time, maximize this upside and minimize the downside. So the whole name of the game with polarities is to get the benefits of each, minimizing the limits of each, in order to have a net gain, which is effectiveness as a coach in this case, or as a leader. And so this will be important for you as you're coaching leaders or anybody that you're coaching. They will have polarities to deal with. Some other examples of leadership polarities: being able to be visionary but also be grounded, being able to be directive, provide direction but also engage people in participation, paying attention to the task that it gets done and the relationships you have with the people you work with, decentralizing in order to have the various parts of the organization be responsive and agile, yet centralizing in order to coordinate the system. Also, organizations need to pay attention to the short term and the long term, to profitability and growth, to cost and quality, and to continuity and transformation or stability and change. So what you can see right away is that polarities exist at the individual level, at the organizational level, and they also exist at the national and international level. So they're highly scalable. So when we look at coaching itself, coaches that leverage the International Coaching Federation core competencies polarities well are more effective. Now, the core competencies that are listed in within the International Coaching Federation are listed not as pairs. I think it would be helpful to do so, but they are listed as a whole set of important core competencies. What I'm suggesting is that if those core competencies were laid out in pairs, it would enhance the effectiveness of the coach. So we're not dismissing any of the competencies. We're saying that pairing them up can have a real benefit. So for example, effective coaches are able to challenge, and they're also able to support. And that leads to effective coaching. And this shows up in the core competencies. Challenge and support both show up. Also, being self-assured and being humble. Being self-assured is great, but if you're self-assured without being humble, you can be seen as arrogant. If you're humble without being self-assured, you can be seen as wishy-washy. So what we need to be able to do to be an effective coach or an effective leader is to be self-assured and also be humble, and that leads to being an effective coach. And another example is the coach is a resource and the coachee is a resource. As a coach, one of the things you're doing is making sure that you're bringing your resourcefulness to the table, but also tapping into the coachee as a resource to support them in their moving forward in what's important to them. One other thing I want to just say about coaching and polarities is that the coaching setting, the one-on-one setting, is the easiest place to apply polarity thinking, because when you create a polarity map, which we'll get to in a minute, the polarity map is always a values and language clarification process. And in coaching, the map that you create with the coachee only needs to work for him or her. So it makes it much easier than trying to get a polarity map generated that works, for example, for a whole organization. So this is the easiest place and the best place to actually begin learning to apply polarity thinking is in a one-on-one coaching setting. So we're going to talk about three coaching applications in this session. The first one is supporting coaches in leveraging ICF's core competencies as polarities. The second is your, as coaches, supporting coachees in seeing and leveraging their own individual polarities. These may be personal polarities, like work and home, or they may be larger organizational polarities, or polarities in their leadership, or they may be supporting coachees in seeing and leveraging the organizational polarities that are important to them. So in all of these areas, we think that a polarity lens can be useful to you as a coach, to coachees for themselves individually, and coachees in terms of their organizational polarities that can help with. So in summary, polarities are interdependent pairs, also called paradox dilemmas and tensions. They are energy systems in which we live and work. We live in them and they live in us. So for those who aren't familiar yet with polarities, I'm going to give a couple of examples of what we mean by this. One simple metaphor about all polarities is activity and rest. Now notice all of us are always we live in the polarity of activity and rest. We can't go someplace outside of activity and rest and decide whether we want to be involved in activity and rest. We're just in it as long as we're alive. So we get up in the morning and we're active, we get stimulated and challenged. We get the benefits of activity, which is to be stimulated and challenged. But if we just focus on activity and don't give ourselves any rest, the system moves to the downside of that pole, the limits of that pole. So we become tense and overwhelmed or burned out. And the natural response when we experience the downside of one pole is to move to the upside of the other pole. So we go home, we get some rest, we get relaxed, rejuvenated, we get those benefits. But if we just go and rest and get lay in bed forever, What happens is we get the downside of that pole. We have boring and loss of energy. So notice what's happening here. There's, with each pole of a polarity, there's an upside that that pole brings. Activity brings stimulation and challenge, and rest brings relaxation and rejuvenation. So we need both of those things. And over time, we oscillate through this energy system. We get up in the morning, we're challenged. Before we get too tired, we need to go back and get some sleep. So on a 24-hour basis, we're oscillating back and forth with activity and rest. We're even doing that within the day. So this is a polarity all of us live in. But when we talk about leveraging a polarity, what we mean by that is to intentionally engage a polarity that we already live in order to do something special. So in this case, if we wanted to run a marathon, we would treat activity and rest differently. And this is where the polarity map comes in play. So what we have at the top here is what we call the greater purpose. Why bother to be intentional about activity and rest? Well, if I want to run a marathon, I can't just get up, go to work, and go home. I have to intentionally do some things. So on the activity side, I need to increase my endurance. And I do that by having these action steps, which is I would run further each workout day. But I also need to get the benefits of rest, because the muscles actually build on the rest cycle. Assuming you're active, the muscles build on the rest cycle. So we need to get adequate downtime between workout days. So with all polarities, to leverage them, we need to intentionally have action steps to support each upside. The other thing we need to do is to be aware there is a downside to each of these. So the downside of activity without rest would be muscle injury. The downside of rest and that would be experienced by feeling an early warning for that muscle injury would be feeling tired when you wake up in the morning. So that lets you know early that you maybe need to back off from your activity a little bit. So say I was planning to run 15 miles one morning, but I ended up staying up really late that night and I feel kind of tired when I wake up. I may decide to back off from my projected run. And with that early warning of tiredness, I may back off to only run 10 miles that day as a part of my regimen. On the other hand, on the rest side, if you don't work out, then you get muscle atrophy. And an early warning for muscle atrophy might be that you miss a workout day. Now, that's not a problem to miss a workout day if you're in a six-month program for running a marathon, but you can't continue to miss the workout day or you'll be in trouble. So this is an example of what we mean by leveraging a polarity. You need to have action steps to maximize both upsides, and you need to pay attention to early warnings so that you don't get caught in either downside. Finally, a couple of points. If you overfocus on one pole to the neglect of the other, you always get the downside of the pole you overfocus. So my son Tim qualified for the Boston Marathon 5 times, but 2 times he did not actually run in the marathon. And the reason was, after qualifying in the Detroit Marathon, he overfocused on activity, running harder than he needed to without giving himself adequate rest. So he ended up getting shin fractures. He was in the downside of the activity pole. And notice what happens. Over time, if you focus on one pole for too long, first you get the downside of the pole you overfocus on. In this case, he had shin fractures. Then you find yourself in the downside of the other pole as well. So that's how all polarities work with this example. So the object is to maximize both upsides and minimize the downsides. And in a healthy life, we do this fairly well, whether we're running a marathon or not. So this is a quick overview of how all polarities look and work and how we would leverage them. So what we have to leverage polarities is what we call a small process, which is an acronym for 5 steps. The first is you need to be able to see the polarity. The second is you need to map it, see its upsides and downsides. Then you can assess how well am I doing? Am I over-focusing on one pole or the other? Then you learn from that assessment how you need to proceed to go ahead and leverage. And the leveraging is through your action steps and early warnings. And every step of the way, you're engaging key stakeholders. Now, again, with coaching, notice you don't have to engage a lot of key stakeholders because you just have the person in front of you who is the coachee is the stakeholder. That's what makes it a very simple system in which to leverage polarities. So I want to talk about this as an example of two coaches and how we might deal with them from a polarity perspective. We'll also deal with the coaching core competencies at this point. So we've got a person, a coachee, who's Tom the Tight and Larry the Loose. And that could be Barry the Loose, because I tend to hang out on the loose pole. So if we have these two people who we're coaching, and we look at the ICF coaching core competencies. Under coaching presence, there is a statement that around presence, and that is that the coach is present and flexible during the coaching process, dancing in the moment. So if you looked at an assessment that just had this particular core competency, which is being flexible, and you had a continuum between rigid and flexible, which one of the two people here would get a misleading positive message and which would get a misleading negative message? What I'm suggesting is that since Larry the Loose, since he hangs out on the loose pole, he would probably score fairly high on this flexible dimension because he's loose, he's easy, he's flexible. Tom the Tight would tend to be seen more rigid. So if you just looked at that score, you'd say, well, Larry's the better coach because he's flexible on this core competency. He hangs out on that flexible pole. And Tom would get a misleading negative message that he's not as good a coach because he's seen more towards this rigid end. But if you look at it from a polarity perspective, what's happening is you're assessing a diagonal on a polarity map from the downside of one pole to the upside of the other. So this upside is seen as a solution to the problem. Tom's too tight, he needs to be more flexible. But this is a setup for Tom to get this message because there's more at play. So let's look at another ICF core competency which fits in the direct communication section. And in this case, it says the coach is clear, articulate, and direct in sharing and providing feedback. So if we look at this continuum from ambiguous to clear, notice what happens. At this point, Tom the Tight gets positive feedback because he, in his preference for being on a tight pole, he's more likely to be clear. Larry the Loose is more likely to be seen as ambiguous. So also in this dimension, when you have just this dimension alone, each of them are getting misleading messages because what's happening is you're now looking at another diagonal within a polarity map. And the ICS competency is clear, articulate, direct is the upside of the tight pole. So in some cases, like in the International Coaching Federation's core competencies, you have both of these dimensions within the same assessment, but they're not seen as interrelated to each other. The interdependency of these two dimensions don't show up. And this, for example, is what would happen in the International Coaching Federation's core competencies. They don't pair these up. But if you do pair them up, it looks like this. So the objective to being an effective coach is to be able to be both clear and flexible. So you want to be both clear, to be clear and articulate, directed and direct in sharing and providing feedback, and you want to be flexible during the coaching process, dancing in the moment. So an effective coach is doing both, and we should be assessing both. So now I want to get to this process of getting unstuck. If I were coaching Tom the Tight, and he got feedback that he's seen as rigid during the coaching process, and he seems to get stuck in the moment. What the core competency would advocate for in ICF is he needs to be more flexible during the coaching process. He needs to be able to dance in the moment. So we'd want him to move from being rigid to more flexible. However, from a polarity perspective, there's a potential wall that he would experience as you coach him towards being more flexible. And this wall is based on another part of the polarity map, which is, by the way, another core competency that is not being articulated. In this case, is clear, articulate, and direct in sharing and providing feedback. And if you have that value, this value of being clear, you'll have a fear of being ambiguous, confused, and indirect in sharing and providing feedback. So what happens if you're talking with Tom the Tight about being more flexible, instead of just saying you need to go from here to here, you slow down and recognize this wall that seems to be blocking him is actually a wall based on a value that he has about being clear, which is also a core competency, and a fear about losing that core competency. So if we were to talk to coach Tom about his own coaching, or if he was a leader, this also fits with a leader, obviously. But if we're coaching Tom the Tight, we would say first we would go to the upside of the pole that he values, that he hangs out on. And we say, Tom, One of the things in terms of coaching's core competencies that you're really solid on is you're being clear, you're articulate, you're direct in sharing and providing feedback. And that's an asset that you should be proud of and we want you to hold on to. And notice how the wall now becomes a bridge to the fear. Given your desire to be clear, I can understand how you would be concerned about being ambiguous or confusing, and certainly don't want that to happen. And I don't want that to happen either. At the same time, the question is there a way that we could experiment with you being exploring some flexibility in your coaching process? And can we do that in a way that would continue to hold on to your clarity and articulateness and directness in order for you to be a more effective coach? So this is the what we call the getting unstuck process in polarity thinking, and which can be used in coaching around any polarity. So the first thing is to recognize that it is a polarity, and then to be able to support and work with your coachee in moving through that polarity map, which affirms both upsides of the map. And you can get into action steps and early warnings as a part of that process.
How do we manage the tussle that goes on in your head? I'm assuming they mean as a coachee, as a coach, mm-hmm. during the coaching conversation. So how do you manage the tussle that goes on?
I think if you're aware of a tension between two dimensions within your head, should I be supportive right now or should I be challenging? I think that what is important is which of those two is most important at the moment. So you make a decision. Right now, it feels like there's a need to challenge the assumptions or the position that the coachee is taking. Or it might be that what the coachee really needs is some support for where they are and who they are, with challenge coming later. So you make that call in the moment. But what you do know from a polarity perspective is that over time, the coachee needs to experience from you both challenge and support. If they're only feeling support and no challenge, that will undermine your coaching impact. And if it's only challenging without support, it won't work. So when you do which one of those is up to you in the moment, but what you do know is over time, it'll be important that they experience both challenge and support.
Do you explain polarities as a tool to the coachee, or what's the best way to do it during a conversation?
Yes, I think it is helpful to explain a polarity to a coachee. And you can actually, if you're on the phone with them, for example, you can just have them take out a piece of paper and you can just, describe what a polarity map looks like. Just put a big X on the page and put an and in the middle of the X, a vertical line and a horizontal line. And then you can start exploring with them. It's very easy for people to catch on around a tension they're dealing with. And if it's a polarity, it'll be helpful for them to do a map, and they can do it, real quickly. If you're sitting with them, if you're in a room with them, then you can look at the same page together. You can create that map together with words that work for him or her as you're building it. And you can also, by the way, you can actually get up on the floor and put an X, put the paper on the floor with the X in it and have them physically walk to the different places as they're creating content. Physical involvement in the process can be very helpful. So all those options are available to you as a coach.
Barry, there are some other questions. I know you'd like to share the organizational example. So why don't you go with that? I'll note down some of these questions and share them with you after you finish.
Okay, great. Just a reminder that the process is seeing, mapping, assessing, learning, and leveraging, the small process. So this is an example that I'd like to share with you. I'm invited fairly regularly to go to the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, to work with executive senior naval officers. And one time when I was going there to make a presentation, David Wennergren, who at that time was the chief information officer for the U.S. Navy, he was going to come in the day before I was doing a day on polarity thinking. He was coming in to talk with the senior officers. And Barry Frew, the retired naval officer who invites me to Monterey, said, Barry, can you come in early because I'd like you to meet our chief information officer for the Navy the day before you do your presentation. So I came in early. I sat in the back of the room in the latter part of the afternoon. And then we went out to dinner together. And so I'm sitting with David Wennergren and about four other naval officers, you know, at a round table in the dining restaurant. And the naval officers, since they knew that I was going to be, I'd been introduced as the guy doing the polarity stuff the next day, they politely asked me to share something about polarity thinking. So I shared a couple of things, and they started asking questions and ended up just asking me questions and me responding to questions for the whole meal. David Wenigren didn't say a thing. But at the end of the meal, he said, "This is so interesting. I would love to be at this workshop you're going to do tomorrow, but I've got to fly out at 6:30 in the morning. I've got other commitments. But could I give you a call?" And I said, "Sure, that would be wonderful." So about 2 months later, I get the call from the Pentagon, and he had now been moved to been promoted. He was the Deputy Chief Information Officer for the whole Department of Defense of the United States. And as he was in his new position, going around listening to people about what are the issues, what are the concerns, to better understand what he needed to deal with, he said, "Barry, there's two groups that are just fighting with each other within the Pentagon." And he said, "One group says, we need to have good information sharing. If we don't have good information sharing, we'll have another 911 incident, which was a problem because we didn't have good information sharing. We can't serve and protect our country without good information sharing." He said, "There's another group that they're fighting with. They're saying we need to have information security. If we don't have good information security, then the enemy can get information can get information we don't want them to have. And we can't serve and protect without information security." And he said to me over the phone, he said, "Barry, these two groups are trying to protect the country from the other group." He said, "I don't think we are serving and protecting by this fight. Could this be one of those polarity things you talked about a few months ago?" And I said, "Yes, I think so, sir." And he said, "Well, would you come out and explain polarity thinking to my executive team? Because we are not serving and protecting by fighting over this issue." So we went to the Pentagon and met with David Wenigren. So now the first step is seeing. He saw the polarity just based on his a dinner conversation. He wasn't at the workshop at all, but he saw the polarity and invited us in to map it, so or to work on it. So the first thing we do is mapping. And in this process, what I did with the group, there were about 12 people in his executive team at the Pentagon. And so I asked them the question, you know, what would be all the positive results if you did a good job of information sharing? What would be the positive results if you did a good job of information security? And what would happen if you over-focused on information sharing to the neglect of information security? What would that look like? And they generate this content. And then the next question, what happens if you over-focus on information security to the neglect of information sharing and you get this content? So they generate the map. The map is a wisdom organizer. The wisdom is in the room. I don't have to understand, you know, all I have to do is understand the principles by which polarities work. And then they generate the content. So now we have the second step is mapping. So seeing, mapping. Now we're going to go into assessing. And the way we assess is we just ask the question, how often are you experiencing the benefits of each pole? And notice the top two, you want to almost always be in both upsides. And they want to almost never be in each downside. So we did a quick assessment where I just asked them verbally, where do you think we are? And I raised the question. I said, is it possible that you've overfocused on information security because they have more power? Information sharing has more power. And they said, actually, Barry, it looks like this. So this is a net result of a chronic fight over two poles of polarity. You end up getting both downsides. So we said, okay, this is why you invited me in here. We've got work to do. So the next thing we do then is we go to action steps. And I ask them, what are you doing or could you be doing to maximize the upsides of this poll? And they generated stuff here. Then I said, what are you doing or could you be doing to maximize this upside? And notice how they start to think in parallel terms. This first thing up here says, marketing, understand the imperative to share. Over here, they've got marketing, understand the value of security. And so they look in the area of training, how and why to share training, practicing good security hygiene. So what happens is, you look at what are we going to do to maximize each upside. Then we raise the question, how would you know early that you're getting into this downside and early into this downside? And so that process we did in a day there with them, and they used this. They gave me permission to share it, but they Dave Wenigren went on and used this throughout the Pentagon as a way to shift this from being a fight that was dysfunctional to a synergy between the two, lifting them towards what they generated as their greater purpose, they said, was information advantage. That's one story example of how this leveraging polarities would be applied. And in this case, it could be with David Wenigren as the coachee, but then also in a consultative process with a larger system. Notice how much more complicated it gets, because in terms of agreeing on the polarity map, because you have two groups that are polarized with each other needing to agree on the map. Whereas with coaching, you just have to have your coachee agree with the with the content of his or her map, and you're good to go.
Barry, one of the participants was asking about coupling the key ICF competencies as polarity pairs.
Yes, and there are a bunch of them. I mean, they're right there. It would just be, I think, useful to have them intentionally laid out as pairs. It would really support the development of our coaches to have them see various core competencies from a both and perspective.
This model requires a pretty mature coach. So could you please reflect in terms of the coach maturity, skills, and experience for the model to be effective?
I think there would be some real advantages to having a mature coach. He or she would be, through their life experience and their experience as a coach, they would already be leveraging polarities without necessarily being explicit about it. They'd already be able to be both supportive and challenging, that be able to be clear and flexible. So people who are effective coaches and more mature coaches, often would be more effective based on their experience. People who are effective coaches are already doing a pretty good job at leveraging some key polarities. That's what makes them a good coach. What can make them an even better coach, I think, is by being more intentional themselves about leveraging polarities, and being intentional with their coachees about helping them do it. So I think the more maturity you have, the more likely it will come to you more easily. But I think even very young coaches can use this, I think, quite effectively. And you're really relying a lot on the coachee to help you. They're creating the map for them. You're supporting them in creating the map. So you're asking the questions and they're answering the questions about what language would work for them as you're doing the map. I think that they wouldn't need much more training in coaching, but they would need, I think, some support in training in leveraging polarities. And that's available for those who want it.
Barry, many of the coaches here use different models and different approaches to coaching. Many of them are experienced coaches. Some of them are relatively new. So explicitly, what is the difference? What's the force multiplier that using a polarity approach could make to the outcome of a coaching conversation?
It has a couple of different impacts when you are aware of, when you can see, and your coachee can see that something is a polarity to leverage as distinct from a problem to solve. It will increase the speed with which they get to their desired outcome, and it will increase the sustainability of what they're going after. So, for example, when we talked about the Tom the Tight, who wanted to be more flexible in his leadership or in his coaching, needed to be more flexible. If you just work with him as a coachee on how he can be more flexible without also affirming and supporting his holding on to his clarity, you will radically reduce the speed with which he becomes flexible, if he becomes flexible at all. And once he becomes flexible, he will experience the downside of flexibility, which is ambiguity, and he'll be frustrated with that, which actually reinforces his going back to that rigid pole, the clear pole, I'm sorry, and being experienced as rigid. And what I'd like to do in relation to that, the whole notion of speed and sustainability, I've got another organizational story I'd like to share to build on that. This is the situation with this arrangement. I was on the phone with three people from a large company that knew about polarity thinking, and they wanted me to come in and spend a day with their folks. And it was about 200 people that were coming in. It was a US-based company that was located in 46 countries around the world. And I'm on the phone with them, and we're just trying to do a preparation for this day I'm going to do on polarity thinking. And one of the things they say to me is they say, Barry, I think you need to know the theme. And I said, what is that? And they said, the theme is leading through values. And I said, well, that's terrific, because values tend to come in pairs. They're the two upsides on a polarity map for where they'd be located. So if we're looking at leading through values and we're looking at polarities, I said there'll be a very good fit. The three people were the chief operating officer, the chief learning officer, and the head of the design team for this one-week process that they were bringing people from all over for this leadership gathering. So I said, for example, the chief operating officer said to me, are you saying that values come in pairs? And I said, yes, I think they do. And so I said, if I work with an organization and they're articulating their values, I encourage them to put them in pairs in the first place. If they already have a list, like the International Consulting Coaching Federation has a list of core competencies, if they have a list of values, I encourage them to look at whether they might be show up in pairs. And he said to me, wait a minute, if you're going to be fooling around with our key values in front of our top 200 people, I want to know what you would do with it. And he said, I'd like to send you our list of values and hear what you would do with them. And I said, okay. So they sent me their list of values. They had five or six key values. One of them was autonomous business units. Now, if you're located in 46 countries, building in some autonomy for these business units in all of these countries makes some sense. So you can see how autonomous business units would be a good value. It would be a legitimate desire to have that. So what I'm trying to do now, so we've got autonomous business units as a value, and I put it there. And my goal in this conversation was to give them some competitive advantage based on their values. And I said, notice you've got autonomous business units, but you don't have anything like integrated business units. And of course they said, well, that's clear. So what do you make of that? And I said the following, and I'm going to speed this up for the sake of you, but essentially we went through this process. I said, your organization, because you have autonomous business units as a value, but you don't have integrated business units as a value, you're likely to overfocus on autonomous business units to the neglect of the integration of those business units. And you're going to get in the downside of that pole. You'll have silos, isolation of the units, excess competition, inequality between the units, and redundancies. And I said, at some point in time, you're going to identify this as a problem. When you do, you're going to bring your business unit heads together, and you're going to say, what are we going to do as a solution? And when you come up with a solution, it'll be sort of the antidote to the silos and the excess competition, et cetera. So you're going to go from silos to integration of business units, collaboration and mutual support, equality and mutuality, efficiencies of coordination, et cetera. I said, you're going to have this meeting. You're going to say that this is where you want to go. And then you're not going to go there. There was silence on the end of the phone. And finally, the chief operating officer said in an angry voice, he said, who have you been talking to? And I said, I haven't been talking to anybody. I just know how values work and how polarities work. And so this would be predictable. And he said, wait a minute. I understand from our having autonomous business units as a value, how you'd come up with the silos and the excess competition, et cetera, and redundancies. And I understand how you'd come up with the list of integration of the business units and collaborations where we wanted to go. But did I hear you correctly when you said we weren't going to walk our talk? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, I want to know how you knew that, because 2 years ago, I held that meeting where we agreed to the person that we were going to go to this integrated business units and collaboration and all of that. And he said, I want to know how you knew we weren't going to walk our talk, because this is costing us billions of dollars. And we've hardly moved an inch in 2 years, even though everybody's agreed to do it. So from a polarity perspective, it's understandable, because the resistance is going to come from what's going to not talked about. Notice what we have here. We have a problem and a solution. If you put it on a polarity map, it's actually seen as a self-correction and ongoing oscillation. The resistance is going to come from the other two quadrants. This is typical gap analysis here. Gap analysis has a problem, a solution, and then a strategy to bridge the gap between the problem and the solution. When you're coaching an individual coachee, they may identify a problem, come up with a solution, and your job will support them and then figuring out how they're going to have a solution to their problem. But if it's either a personal polarity they're dealing with or an organizational polarity they're dealing with, and they treat it as a problem to solve, they are not likely to get there. And even if they get there, it won't it won't be sustainable. In this case, they couldn't even get there. So what we did next was I said, we looked at what would be the values and the fears that were getting in the way. Remember that roadblock getting in the way of them doing this. On the values side, it would be, why did they have autonomous business units as a value in the first place? Well, for all sorts of good reasons. When you have autonomy in your business units, you can have entrepreneurial initiative, speed and responsiveness, business unit freedom and innovation, and business unit recognition. If you value this at 99 on 100 scale, you'll be afraid of this at 99 on 100 scale. You'd be afraid of bureaucracy and red tape, slow and unresponsive, excess conformity and lack of innovation, and lack of unit recognition. So what they needed to do, and what we did with all 200 people, is we, in table groups of six, everybody generated this map with autonomous business units and integrated business units. They all filled in the content, and then they looked at action steps for the upside of each pole and the downside of each pole, and that became the whole focus. So a couple of key points here. In response to what are the value, what's the value add when you can see, when you stop treating something as a problem to solve, if in fact it's a polarity, and start treating it as a polarity. The first is that every change effort is a part of an infinity loop energy system, and a polarity energy is at play. Secondly, if you treat a polarity as if it were a problem to solve, you'll reduce the attainability of what you're going after. You'll slow down the process by increasing the resistance. And even if the resistance is overcome, and this resistance, by the way, could be internal to the coachee, he or she is afraid of something. The goal of the change is then inherently unsustainable because you can't just shift to the other pole. It won't be sustainable. If you want to guarantee the failure of a change effort, tie it to one pole of a polarity. If you want success, tie it to both poles. And a couple more points. Leveraging the polarity energy system within a change effort will increase its attainability, the ability to get it in the first place, the speed with which you get it, and then the sustainability. Because polarity is indestructible, any polarity that you identify will be a solid base on which to build a sustainable change in a sustainable organization.
In a corporate or group setting, when you don't have a senior leader already identifying the polarities, where do you start in getting everyone to name and agree on the polarities as the focus?
We need to do is we need to first listen ourselves and be useful by sharing a polarity that might be showing up real clearly, and then expand thinking. So instead of trying to expand thinking, I mean, hope that it'll be useful. The order, I think, is really important to just listen. I'll give you a quick example of this. I was called up by David Mullen, who was the director of organizational development at Intel of Ireland. He said, Barry, I love your book. And he said, yeah, about a year from now, my executive team is going to demand that we bring you to Intel of Ireland. And I said, they are. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, what's going to happen between now and a year from now that's going to result in them inviting me to Intel? He said, well, I sit in on the executive team meetings. I'm going to listen for when there's an obvious polarity that shows up. It's obvious to me, this is a polarity. They're trying to centralize, they're fighting over decentralization or centralization, or they're fighting over short-term, long-term, some kind of polarity fight. And I'm going to say, this looks like something where we probably can do both, even need to do both. And it will make a contribution to the tension, addressing the tension that's in the room, that's in the immediate need. And they'll find it useful that we can both be right somehow. And we need to get the best of both. How do we do that? Might not even call it a polarity the first time around. But then I'll wait till another thing that's a real obvious polarity to me, and I'll share with them again. I think this might be another one of those things. I call them polarities, or they're called polarities in literature. And he said, and my hope is that I'll be useful again. He said, there will be enough times when polarities will show up and I'll be able to allude to them that they'll eventually say, who is this guy then who wrote this polarity stuff? It keeps coming up in our meetings. And he said, they will then demand that he bring me into Intel of Ireland. So I said, well, that's interesting. I'll look forward to hearing from you. So it was about 10 months later, I get a call from Dave Mullins at Intel of Ireland. He said, Barry, my executive team has demanded that we bring you to Intel of Ireland. So the point here is that the worst thing you can do about polarities, sharing them with people, is to try to sell it. And that's the problem with this particular thing, where I've only got an hour. I couldn't listen to people, what your issues were, So I tried to take issues that I knew were issues within the coaching arena to respond to in some sample stories. But the best thing to do is to listen and identify what might be some key polarities, some struggles that you think are polarities. So you need to get some grounding yourself first so you can see them and be useful with them. But the other thing is you can introduce the concept of polarities by using things like inhaling and exhaling and activity and rest to get some an area of appreciation for the phenomena that doesn't include something where there's a big fight going on and people are identified emotionally to it.
Barry, we have a couple more questions, but Michael okay. Cullen has a question, so I'm going to invite him to ask the question on video.
Okay.
Hi, Barry.
Hi.
Thank you so very much for this wonderful presentation. I'm completely new to it, but it is a common issue in coaching, dealing with dilemmas and polarities. And I can see this obviously being applied to ethical issues that constantly plague coaches, perhaps when dealing with organizations where they have a mandate from their sponsor and they've got an agenda from their client. And how do they deal with those things? You just give me a quick synopsis of how you establish the XY axis. I see you have positive on top, negative on bottom, and opposing views on either side. I'm just wondering how you came up, for instance, with that values quad and the fears quad after you discussed the diagonal. Is there a process that you go through?
There are two sets of values. So both upper quadrants are values. And then the diagonal lower quadrant is the fear. So if I look at this one, for example, just so that you can see it, the valuing on administrative leadership and entrepreneurial leadership. This is another story we won't have time to tell you about complex adaptive systems. But administrative leadership values efficiency and results and exploitation, where entrepreneurial leadership focuses on leading innovation and growth. On learning, innovation, and growth. So this is a value and this is a fear. And that's the point of view of the administrative leadership, is they value this and are afraid of this. Entrepreneurial leadership values this and is afraid of this. So when we establish it, we ask people the questions, we name the poles that need to be both either neutral or positive. And then we look at positive results and the key stakeholders are involved in generating that content. And they agree on what the greater purpose is, which shows up here.
Thank you so much, Barry, for sharing your work with us. Your insights were truly powerful. As a believer and practitioner of the polarity approach in my coaching and consulting work, I've experienced firsthand the quantum shift that polarities helps people make when they gain an understanding of the phenomenon and how it applies in their lives. That was Barry Johnson on Leveraging Polarities in Coaching. Thank you for listening in. Join us again soon to learn more about the latest research, thinking, and effective practices in leadership and coaching across the world. Have a nice day.